you're struggling with drugs, alcohol, gambling or food, or concerned about somebody who is, tune in to the Living Free show on 3CR at 1pm every Thursday.
I don't know how I got there, but I couldn't stop it.
I had stopped expecting that anybody cared.
Never enough. I'm never enough. It's never enough. He's never enough.
That was the confusion.
Tune in to Living Free, stories of recovery from addictive behaviour, Thursdays at 1pm on 3CR. Or listen at 3CR on digital radio or podcasts and live streaming on 3cr.org.au.
Being able to centre myself and be okay in myself and turn my world around.
Living Free. Welcome to Living Free Show on 3CR Community Radio, 855 kHz on your AM radio dial. I'm Anne, and I'd like to acknowledge the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, traditional owners of the land from which 3CR transmits people-powered radio. We'd like to pay our respects to elders past and present and to acknowledge that the material and spiritual connection of Aboriginal people to this land was stolen from them. Each week on the Living Free Show, we showcase one of the many programs that assist in recovery from drug, alcohol, gambling, food, and other addictions. Our guests share their recovery stories and highlight that shared experience saves lives. Before we start, I'd like to remind you that the Living Free Show may involve discussion of topics such as suicide, mental illness, self-harm, and family violence. Please practice self-care and care of others when listening. Today in the show, I'm joined by Sienna, a member of Al-Anon. Al-Anon family groups exist to support relatives and friends of alcoholics by sharing their experience, strength and hope that they can solve their common problems. Sienna also serves as a literature officer for the Australian General Service Office, which is office that looks after all the service side of Al-Anon administration, etc. Welcome, Sienna.
Thank you for having me.
Sienna, would you please tell us where you were born and what your early life was like?
Where I was born? I was born on a bed in Box Hill.
Okay. In a hospital?
In a house. Oh, wow. I was a home birth. My early life... I thought it was quite exciting, as I think we've had a program chat. I come from a sort of performing arts family, and growing up, my dad was sort of on TV and playing at sort of festivals and things, and there was a lot of interesting people around, and it was a lot of fun, and I couldn't wait to sort of be able to do that myself. And so things like sort of structure and routine weren't that important, but again, I didn't mind. We had a pretty sort of strong connection to our extended family, so I had a great childhood, really. It wasn't things didn't go sort of strange for me until I was an older person.
When you say older person, do you mean adult, or do you just mean like a teenager?
I think teenager. I think because I started to get it. Yeah, things started to become difficult for me when I got into relationships, mm-hmm. and I think the first relationship I was in. The first sexual relationship I was in, I was about 16.
Mm-hmm.
And I was one of those kids that most high schools have them. There's a couple who are just kind of in over their heads and they act like an old married couple. And I was one of those.
You were one of those.
So, yeah.
There's always one. There's one in every year level.
Yeah. And I guess it was, I just couldn't wait to be an adult.
Mm-hmm.
Would develop these desperate attachments to people. I would just lose my sense of self, and everything just got swallowed up by this other person.
Mm-hmm.
And I did really well in school. I liked school. I was ducks of my school. But I also sort of helped my boyfriend at the time get through his schooling as well. So I was writing essays, for two people and doing more than I should have, which is a common thing. common theme.
I don't want to make this about me, but you're telling my story,
really?
Except for the performing arts.
Okay.
So go back to the lack of structure and routine that you had in your obviously very groovy family. I'm thinking the home birth, I'm thinking the performing arts.
Yeah.
So this has got to be the 70s, right?
I was born in 1980.
So the lack of structure and routine, what impact do you think that had on you?
It was just not something, I don't know, because I think I spent also a lot of time with my grandparents, and they were very structured and very routine and very opposite, really. Like, their house was kind of clean, warm, and food in the cupboards. And it was wonderful. Like, my mum's parents, I used to just call them up and say, I'm coming to stay. And they just open up their house and my nan would cook for me. And, yeah, so I sort of had a lot of structure from, I guess why I sort of got an idea of what structure was from them. But I don't know. The structure thing didn't, it's never bothered me. It's not how I choose to run my family. But at the time, yeah, I didn't really understand that. Yeah, I just kind of would go over to other people's places and I'd be like, oh, this is pretty, restrictive. And this is a bit weird and it's really super ordered. And and my friends used to want to come to my house anyway because we were allowed to kind of do what we wanted and things we weren't allowed to do. So, so it was kind of like fun to be at my house anyway.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So what about alcohol? What was the situation with alcohol in your house?
There was drinking. But again, and I sort of also think this is a cultural thing. Like, it's seen as, alcohol is not seen as a serious drug. It's not seen as, it's just have a drink. It's, it's just a drink. So it was never seen as anything, unhealthy or, it was just something that sort of happened in the house. And it was also like, it's taken me a really long time to let go of it being the definition of having fun.
Mm-hmm.
Like if something's going on and I sort of think, I should, to have wine or a nice, to have, it has to sort of be part of, it's often part of sort of augmenting or making something more fun.
Absolutely. So, you couldn't wait to be in the bits that I really related to when you spoke there was you couldn't wait to be an adult. That was me too.
Yep.
As soon as you got involved with men, in your case.
In my case, men, yes.
It was codependency. It was,
yes.
And I did the same. I did the same at high at year 12 and also at university. It supported another two different people journey through to success. One went way ahead of me. However, we won't go to that there yet. Why do you think you couldn't wait to be an adult, though, as a child?
I think because, the focus was sort of on a lot of adult things. Like, I guess, the partying or, I'd go out late to gigs and I'd just wait till, it was midnight and I'd think, yes, I can totally justify saying that I'm too tired to go to school tomorrow and I'd get the day off.
And they'll just let you do that, yeah.
So it was just, that kind of thing. So but then again, at the same time, because I was from a family where art was really considered important, I was very supported to sort of do, go to drama classes and things like that. So, and certainly learn instruments, so there was, it was, but I guess, I it's an interesting thing. I don't know why I was so... couldn't wait to be an adult, but I just felt like, and I've really enjoyed that part, with my kids, of just really exploring, making, really enjoying Play-Doh and stuff
with
my kids, because it's just, but it is also kind of, I get how monotonous sort of having children is, anyway.
Another issue.
Off topic,
Okay, so it sounds like quite an enriched sort of childhood in many ways.
Mm.
Can you relate anything in that childhood to you becoming very intensely attached to your boyfriend and intensely helpful.
Yeah, yeah. I think, look, I mean, part of my story is that I've been affected by someone else's drinking, but there's also been multiple mental illnesses that have revealed themselves over time. And I think that that's part of it. And I think that those illnesses have existed with other members of my family, but have. But the mental illness or the mental health field, I should say, is become a lot more, is much better at what it does now, and much better at recognizing and helping people. And I don't think that was necessarily the case sort of 40 or 50 years ago.
No. Mm-hmm.
So the intense attachment is probably linked in with the anxiety. You know, like when we unpack our character defects is one of the things you kind of do in the Al-Anon program. It always seems for me, even now, to come back to low self-esteem fear. And it's always like they're such big drivers. And, yeah, I don't know because I was kind of an even-tempered person until I got into relationships. And then it all just took over. And it doesn't make sense because I was always convinced in each relationship that like that was the only chance I ever had to be happy, and I've just blown it.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that was all I'm ever going to get. And it was just it's sad really to sort of think that it was, yeah. And there were always people that I wanted to fix. It was a Technicolor kind of drama. It was about sort of, you know, rescuing, fixing. Like I had really strange ideas about love, I suppose. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Bad ideas about love.
We'll come back to that. Strange ideas about love. That could be your next album. or a film.
Yeah.
Would you say the adults were a bit unpredictable? Was the love a little bit unpredictable, whether you're going to be loved or not? Were they very busy with themselves?
Possibly. I think... yeah, there is some unpredictability. There's some problems with, I think, regulation, you know.
Emotional regulation.
And, but again, that's a term that's become quite common now and quite easily used now, but it wasn't necessarily the case decades earlier. So, yeah, emotional regulation was something I didn't know how to, I just couldn't do. I also sort of our ethos was sort of, you know, organic food and alternative lifestyles. So the idea of kind of psychiatric medication was just completely off the table.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I've again through the program and keeping an open mind to different forms of help, and also because the mental health field is getting better mm-hmm. at what they do. Yeah, I've been really helped by that. And, yeah, I am someone who needs medication every day to be a reasonable person. Mm-hmm. And no one wants to go on pills. No one wants to need pills. But it's, it's just something that in terms of me being a regulated person, I need it. And I can accept that.
Yeah.
Today.
Yeah, it's just whatever era you're born in, isn't it?
Well, it seems that way.
Yeah. I remember in AA, people used to say, this is like 40 years ago, I used to hear people say, pills are for dills, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah,
they would
yeah.
say, you know, don't you, you just need the program, you don't need medication. It was associated with the drug, you know, the drug and the alcohol are all bad.
Yeah.
And it's taken, now things are a little bit more nuanced than that.
Yeah.
And it's understood, as you say, that there's many different ways of being mentally unwell.
Mm. Absolutely.
Yes, and there's different fixes for different problems.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. We will have a little break and we'll be right back.
Mm-hmm.
There are all kinds of reasons people end up with issues with alcohol and other drugs, and it's nothing new. Hi, I'm Professor Scott Wilson from the not-for-profit Aboriginal Drug and Alcohol Council. What always helps is to reflect on what life might be like without the substance abuse, and then take action. Step one is simple. See your GP or drug and alcohol worker and ask for help today. You can visit us at adac.org.au.
A 3CR supporter.
3CR gives space to voices excluded from mainstream media, to people who want to be heard.
And to help keep 3CR on the air, you need to donate and subscribe.
Call 9419 8377 or online at 3cr.org.au.
This is a Living Free show on 3CR 855 kHz on your AM radio dial and 3CR on digital radio. If you would like to listen to one of our many podcasts, then you can find us on your preferred podcast platform or just Google 3CR Living Free and check out our website. You can also contact us via phone or email. Today my guest is Sienna and we're chatting about living with alcoholism, rather not, well, not living with our own alcoholism, living with closeness to a problem drinker. So, Sienna, we didn't in the last section really go into much detail about the nature of your parents' relationship and drinking and all that, but and it was a little bit more unregulated than you described. Mm. Can you just explain why sometimes we don't want to discuss that openly in our life?
Yeah, because I think, the reason is because most people come to Al-Anon because they want to change somebody else's behaviour. They think they're not the problem. The problem is this person. And if this person would just do X, Y, and Z, and often in our case it's stop drinking, everything would be okay. But what we kind of slowly learn is that we don't have the power to change anybody else's behaviour. And then if we don't have the power to change anyone else and these people aren't necessarily going to change, what do we do? And then that is we're left with ourselves and the focus on ourselves and what we want to do with our lives in spite of the fact that these people might continue to keep behaving in destructive ways or ways that that you find hurtful and... Yeah, I think that answers
that's
the question.
It. Yeah. So can you take us back to your childhood a little bit more then before we get up more into your early adult life?
Yep.
Was there anything that you did then that you you recognise now was the child trying to fix, manage and control the adults?
Yeah, like
can
I'm
you
the,
remember what you
yes,
did?
Okay, I remember it all. No, I'm the eldest of four, so I was, the person who got in the middle of the fighting and was the referee and tried to sort things out. And I've continued to be that person, bulldoze in and go, and force solutions and go, this is what you need to do, this is what you need to do. So, yeah, that was my kind of role. And it was interesting because I have a brother who's 18 months younger than me and he was the absolute opposite. He'd go into his room and shut the door.
Yep.
And... But yeah, I've always been. I run straight into the fray.
Yeah. Fearlessness, and I did it myself, and it's that idea that I might only be 12.
Yeah.
But I'm watching this, and I can see what the problem is. So if I just tell them, even though one of them might be just completely drunk and is not going to remember anything you say, you still think I'm just going to get this sorted out once for all.
Yeah, it's taken me years to. Really accept that I just keep thinking if I say it this way, it'll get through. If I tell them this way, you know, if I do this, if I threaten this, if I scold this, scold this way, I mean. And none of it has ever made any difference.
Yeah. That's a really powerful message to get out there, I think. None of it makes any difference.
but you can change, you can live the life that you want to live.
Despite
the fact that, that's the kind of, I guess, the bare bones.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, that's
the program,
actually
really.
Nails it, really.
Yeah.
So take us now to your teenage years. So you're doing well at school and you've got a boyfriend and you're 16 or something.
Yeah, so, and then I sort of, studied and finished year 12 and then I got into uni in the city and that was kind of exciting. And, and then I got involved... Well, yeah, and it was funny because I was in this art course and everyone was just like, just do what you want to do, just whatever you're interested in. And I was just like, I don't know what I'm interested in. I wrote songs and I would sort of just sit in my room and write songs all the time. And but I never sort of shared any of that with my sort of classmates and teachers and things until right up until the very end of it. I had this teacher who was like, I don't really understand why you hid this away did.
It was an arts degree or?
Yeah, media arts.
And you hid this.
But because I thought the songwriting was too conventional, because a lot of it was sort of like sound art and sound art installation and just really fringe things. And I was just, and I can remember in my interview just talking about how I liked Radiohead and Crowded House and the interviewer just going, gee, that's really conservative.
So you pick that up straight away, note to self. Do not be conservative.
Yeah, and because I guess, I just wanted to be accepted. Sorry, I'll... No, I just sort of, doing... And even that has up until recently been a foreign concept of just doing something because I want to do it.
I know.
And that's something that Al-Anon has really helped me with. It's like there's all these coulds and shoulds. Like I would do things because I could. I would do things because I thought I should. But now it just seems that, after years of tuning into what is right for you, it's like you do it because you want to. These days I do things because I want to or I don't. And it doesn't have to be any more complicated than that.
I know. That's so profound. That's one of the profoundest things I've learned, that what I want to do is actually one of the primary ways you make a decision.
Mm.
I didn't know that.
No.
I thought what you had to do was the right thing.
Yes.
And to find that out, you had to think about it a lot and take everybody else into consideration.
Yeah. And I do think that's also a female, like we're very socialized to think of other people. Just even like I've noticed when, I go to a social event and I'm always thinking about what I should bring or what... And, should we bring a present or that? And my partner's always like, I don't think we have to bring anything. And
because
it's
nobody
like,
told me.
But it's this thing of this unspoken sort of social code that gets indoctrinated into females. It still exists.
Yeah.
And I do think that that's also, it's not just, that's part of it as well.
And when that plays, when there's a dysfunction, that's going to get activated.
Yeah.
So what were you like with this boyfriend, this first boyfriend?
Look, I really wanted to be in a relationship and we got together and he was a really talented artist. He was really, really clever. But, he would get drunk and do these dumb things like get arrested. Like the night I had a CD launch with my band, he got arrested. and the day before I was meant to go in and record my first EP, he broke up with me. It was just like this real sad, dynamic of sabotage. And he used to say, it was really funny, he used to say, like, really honestly, I'm a jealous guy and I don't want you to be famous. And I just sort of thought, it was a really not a good relationship. It lasted 10 months. And then when it ended, I, again, had just such trouble getting over it. And that's kind of when I had a... cousin who was in AA at the time, and he was just like, look, come with me. And we went to this meeting, and I mean, not a lot of what he said really made sense. I remember him saying, the most important person in this situation is you. I'm just like, nah, it's not
right.
And then I went to that meeting and there was two other guys and they were talking about insanity and stuff, and I was just like, oh, okay, cool. And but then I think a couple of weeks after, I went to it was a meeting in Bourke Street at the Salvation Army City Thursday.
Yep.
And that was full of women. It was like about 20 women in the room. And I just sat there and I just cried and cried. And I didn't even really know why.
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember this old lady, her name was Eve, and she was like, come here, darling.
Mm-hmm.
And she just came and gave me this big hug. And it was just, lovely. And I went to that. I kept going to that meeting I went to that meeting and that meeting only for quite a couple of years. It was like a big risk to try other ones.
And nobody mentioned that. And you weren't an alcoholic. Were you identifying as an alcoholic?
No.
So nobody mentioned Al-Anon to you?
No. So the only person that mentioned Al-Anon to me was my cousin at the time, because he was in AA. So I think he also attended Al-Anon for a time. And I was seeing a psychiatrist. Who was down at Albert Road, and she just sort of said, Ellen, I think Al-Anon's a really good thing for you to go to. And so I was like, okay, I'll do it.
Mm-hmm. So, but that's a few years later, right?
I was 22.
This is after another boyfriend?
Sort of second, the uni boyfriend, yeah. But yeah, and I just remember, yeah, being at the meetings, just thinking, I need to work out how I can change myself or change him so we can be together.
Yeah, yeah.
Even though the relationship was a shit sandwich.
Yeah,
And everyone was really, I can remember telling this friend of mine that we'd broken up, and she said, I really think that's for the best. And I was just like, how can you say that?
Yeah, you don't understand how special we are. Did you mention that to her?
Oh, yeah. But I just make up all these excuses as to why we should still be together, because the hole that was left behind was too painful.
Yeah. So did you find, are you like me in the sense that you were likely to shut down the emotion and get into the thinking then?
Yeah.
So tell me how that looks for you.
A lot of people have sort of, thought I was over analytical, think about things too much, when I was in that relationship, I thought I was into a lot of spiritual stuff at the time. I'd be going to the TS bookshop all the time and picking up, and I just thought, like, when this guy that I was seeing, he got drunk and cheated on me, and I remember him, and he blamed the alcohol. Like, he said it was because I was just so drunk and she just led me like a baby. And I just sort of took it as, it's this chance for me to really learn about letting go of judgment.
And transcend it. I have to transcend this.
Yeah, it was just bullshit. Yeah. Like, it was just... I feel sad for that young girl who just, that's kind of, and it wasn't even that I didn't even consciously think this is all I deserve, but I know that underneath it all, I was saying it was, a spiritual, an opportunity.
Opportunity, yeah.
But it was just, underneath it all, it was just, it's all I thought I deserved.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I misapplied Al-Anon for a long while with one of my boyfriends, my problematic boyfriends, when I first came in, and I really overemphasized that acceptance part, like you've got to learn acceptance.
Yeah.
And I translated that in my mind as meaning accept everything, because if I'm suffering, it must be me that has to change. And now the obvious answer is get the hell away from that person. You don't jump into a river if there's a crocodile in it. Just get the hell away from it.
And we sort of sometimes think that drama and suffering has meaning when it doesn't.
Yeah, or that it's to do with the intensity of the love.
Yeah. Or the intensity of the makeup or whatever. He was a drinker, I guess, and that was why my cousin took me to Al-Anon, is because he was a drinker and he would blame all of his behaviour on being drunk, but wasn't willing to give up alcohol, because I was like, well, it's obvious you've got to stop drinking. And, I developed this kind of almost permanent knot in my stomach. I was always worried about what he'd do when he'd go out and drink, because all these unpredictable things would happen. That's why I ended up staying, because slowly it unraveled that I was attracted to these. Well, I don't know. I was ending up in these relationships with these guys, because it was part of my past, and it was there. I had family members that were behaved in similar ways, but I hadn't sort of made the connection.
I read something that, not an Al-Anon, but you're attracted to people who feel like home.
Yeah.
and it also allows you to practice all your fixed managing and controlling skills.
I still think I know what's, pick you up as a project if you give me half a chance. Yes. If I'm not travelling well,
that's
the project is you.
So travelling well could be measured by, I'm not picking up projects. I'm actually going, all right.
Yeah.
You're too busy with your own life.
Yeah.
So just to be, to go back a little bit before the next break, so what took you to the psychiatrist? What were you concerned about? Because you must have realised that you needed help.
It was a uni friend who just went, she's like, you're hurting yourself over these guys that are not even worth it. And, she was a psychiatrist that specialised in abusive relationships.
Oh, right.
So, and she was just a great fit for me. She was a bit like a headmistress, and
she just told you to stop doing this and start doing that.
No, but she was Yeah, but I saw her for 5 years, and again, like coming back to the medication thing, and I was just like, no, medication's not the answer. I'm going to talk this through. I'm going to, you know, eat good food, get a lot of sleep, drink purified water, fruit and vegetables, yoga, and I'm going to get better. But yeah, and I think after seeing her for 5 years, she's like, look, we've tried your way. Can we try mine? And that's what I link that in with Al-Anon. There's something, if you try to keep an open mind, you will find help. And I had this friend who was just saying to me, these doctors are trying to help you, Sienna, and you will not let them, you know. And that's also been like, yeah, a pattern that I'd go to doctors and I'd say, this is a problem. And they go, no, it's actually not really a problem. And I go, he just doesn't know what he's talking about. Oh. Like I'd keep going to people, but would not listen to what was being advised. Yeah. So, yeah, anyway, so I feel like, and one of the things in Al-Anon, like you all sit around in a group and everyone has a turn at talking. And I didn't feel, well, I'd noticed like a couple of years after I'd been going, a friend of mine said, yeah, you're actually much better at listening to people. I used to just wait to talk. I'd just roll in and, yeah, like there's something really, and I notice it in my family, like there's like you say something and then someone just steamrolls in and just starts talking and they talk for 5 minutes and there's no kind of back and forth. And, yeah, like listening is like a skill like anything else.
It's a difficult skill, actually.
Yeah.
And that's a really great training ground, isn't it, in an Al-Anon meeting, because you get to talk and then you get to listen to up to another 15 people. And yeah, so that's really good for you.
Yeah, it is. Yes, it's been very good for me.
All right. So did the was it depression you were dealing with?
Yeah, depression, anxiety. Depression, anxiety. I had an eating disorder that took a long time to come out. I also have premenstrual dysphoria. Syndrome or disorder, whatever. And there was a lot of, and at the time, again, like a lot of people and doctors, he was a male doctor. I don't know if I need to say that, but he was like, I think you're just having a bad period.
If I was having a really bad period, mate, you'd have an axe through your
head. And I just thought, I was used to not. Yeah, I just thought I felt more and kind of felt more intensely than other people.
Yep.
I didn't get why things just didn't bowl other people over.
Yeah, they seem to just come. I noticed that too. I used to think, how come they can just break up and then get up the next day and go to work or something? Whereas I'd have to have a big
It'd
be a big recovery period.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah.
Yep. Okay, so look, we'll have a little break now, I think, and then we'll come back and talk about all your recovery.
Yay!
Yay!
Melbourne Food and Wine Festival hosts Feast for Freedom with the Asylum Seeker Resource Centre for one night only. Join us for an exclusive communal dining experience at the ASRC's Home of Hope in Footscray on Wednesday the 25th of March. Share a long table feast created by refugee chefs from Palestine and Sri Lanka. Celebrate incredible food and help raise vital funds for people seeking asylum. Tickets are limited. Book now at feastforfreedom.org.au/MFWF. Feast for Freedom is an initiative of the Asylum Seeker Resource Centre, a 3CR supporter.
You're listening to 3CR 855 AM, streaming at 3cr.org.au, 3CR digital, podcasting or audio on demand. Interested in mental health issues? Then tune into Brainwaves every Wednesday at 5 PM. Brainwaves is a peer-produced and presented program addressing issues that may affect you. 3CR, inclusive radio, making your voice heard.
You're listening to a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned to hear the rest of your 3CR podcast.
This is Living Free Show on 3CR Radio, digital radio, and live streaming on 3cr.org.au/streaming. Today I'm chatting to Sienna about recovery from the effects of alcoholism. I'd like to hear now, Sienna, about all your recovery. Tell me your recovery story, starting from the beginning.
Yeah, well, I've left Al-Anon a few times, so yeah, I've thought I've worked it out and didn't need it anymore a few times. But yeah, so I first came in when I was 22, and then I think my life got sort of better, and yeah, I think, or maybe I'll just skip forward to the last time I left Al-Anon, which was probably 17 years ago, when I met my current partner, a really nice guy, and I was just like, he's all I need, and I threw out all my Al-Anon books and gave them to the op shop, and I think I sort of stopped my medication too. Like, I sort of was like, don't need anything, this is it. And so yeah, raging codependent. And then I think the lights just eventually went out, and I went back to Al-Anon, and I remember this lady coming up to me going, oh, I found your book in the op shop. It still had my name in it. I was like, great, yeah. So I had to buy them all again. But that's fine. So yeah, I think since I had children, because I think that also throws up mental health challenges, obviously. It pokes everything.
Does it ever.
I was able to sort of bring my kids to meetings, so that was really helpful. And I guess I've also come back to Al-Anon because it's where I've found my answers, and I didn't want to find my answers in Al-Anon. I wanted to find it somewhere else, like in Buddhism or yoga or
something a bit sexier.
Yeah, something sexier. Yeah, something we don't, you know. And because I've came in so young, I was just like, I'm too young for this program. I'm too cool for this program. If this program is so great, where are all the famous people? And it has always given me something that I don't find anywhere else, and that's why I keep coming back. And it's just helped me navigate difficult people, difficult situations, and so that's why I've been going for a long time, and I'll continue to do it because it helps me in almost every area of my life.
What is it, do you think? What is the core of it that's not, you're not getting in Buddhism or yoga?
It's a good question. Because I don't. I also think, like, it doesn't necessarily make any sense to me why it works for me. I know why I've tried to make it not work. Like, I've sort of, you know, seen God up on the wall and gone, I don't want to be a part, you know, I don't believe in God, or, you know, but it's not about God, it's not a religious program. It's a spiritual program, and it's a higher power of your understanding, and that can be, as long as it isn't you. I've knew someone who used to pray to a pot plant, you know. So it can, as long as it's about sort of, I guess not a lot of other things encourage you to really take your hands off the steering wheel. It's this real sort of surrender to just accepting life on life's terms. It's not about how people, places and things ought to be, should be, could be. It's how they are. You accept them as they are, and then you decide what you're going to do about it.
Where you're going to position yourself in relation to all of that. It's such a relief to me whenever I say to myself or hear other people say, well, it's a relief to me when I say, thank God I'm not the higher power.
Mm.
Because if I look at my own thinking, I am thinking as though I am a God a lot of the time. Mm. I don't mean that I think that I don't really think that I know everything or can see everything, but because I know that that's not true intellectually. But the worrying that I'm doing suggests that I can control things that I can't control, like my children or other people, so it's just very much about realigning yourself, isn't it, with the rest of the universe. You're not the managing director of the universe.
No, and that's what I mean. Like, I think I know, I don't know, if I think about anyone that I know, I I have an opinion on how they probably, what they could or should do.
Yeah.
It comes very naturally to me. And that's the kind of weird irony, is that like I'm such a know-it-all, but then have this sort of, you know, I've had to build this sort of sense of self and kind of work out what self-esteem really is, and, you know, or what, I don't know. Yeah, I find self-esteem to be a very elusive thing even now. It's sort of, and even like the idea of the true self, it's like, it's not, it's just about who you choose to be in any given moment. And I think that that's also what I love about Al-Anon, is if there's something in your life that you, a personality trait or whatever, that you don't want to engage in anymore, you can change it. You know,
you can
begin. You can let it go, and you can begin again. And that's really, yeah, powerful. And it's true, but it often doesn't feel like an option out in the real normal world.
Well, every single one of the 12 steps to me is completely counterintuitive. It's saying, you know, don't try and even control your own life. It's saying just live in one day. It's all things that are the opposite of what you've been told for your whole life, and the opposite of what everyone else is doing.
I love how I just always come back to, am I okay right now? Do I have everything I need right now or for this day? And, you know, because there's so much fear and the awful things going on in the world, and it's so easy to get caught up in that and catastrophize. But, yeah, I just come back to today, right now, and everything is, yeah, right now, for today, really good.
Yeah. And for this moment.
For this, yep. Yeah, and I'm going to enjoy that, because it could change at any time.
Yeah, this too shall pass.
Yeah, yeah.
So let's get into some practical things. You said it helps you with difficult people.
Yeah.
So difficult people, you don't have to be involved with an alcoholic to be in that situation.
No.
What advice would you give to someone who just says, look, I'm dealing with this difficult person?
Well, I think, in Al-Anon, we're not meant to give advice.
No, but just pretend. You've got license on this radio show.
Look, I don't know. I think one of the most powerful things I've learned is just to own your part in something. I think that's really, like, that goes so far with dealing with anybody. Is this like, if you stuff up or if you offend someone or something comes across the wrong way, if you can say, I'm sorry, I didn't mean it that way, or I'm sorry that you feel that way, it just de-escalates things. It's so, yeah. So it's really, yeah, to say to someone, you might be right. You also may not be.
Yeah.
But you might be right.
Yeah,
I don't necessarily know the answer.
And I might be wrong.
I might be wrong.
So owning your part is a big one. And you also talked about speaking to them. So I think it's always good to make it. Your first thing is make amends for your part. And it was important for me to learn that that doesn't negate their part.
No.
That doesn't mean that they're good,
no,
or bad, or and that you're bad or something.
Or that it didn't happen.
So it's not at all letting them off with their part or anything, because you might say, I acknowledge my part, but from now on don't call me.
Yeah, I acknowledge my part, but I'm going this way.
Yeah, I'll be walking up that way. Which I've literally done. I've literally said I love you and I'm very sorry for what I just said before, but from now on I don't want to speak to you on the phone, we'll just email each other, because it doesn't work. And that feels very liberating to know you can take, and it's just a little action you're taking, you're not overhauling the whole relationship or the other person.
But yeah, definitely how powerful small actions can be. Small pauses
and small shifts in behaviour.
Just staying silent, not responding to a particular, let something that someone said hang in the air.
I love that one. Just let it hang in the air. What about difficult situations or like difficult decision? Say you had a decision to make. What would you do?
I often find that it's, if I'm kind of, struggling with a decision, it's probably not time to act. I'm sort of probably thinking in the future. Like, again, not to use the God word, but they have this thing, it's in one of the books, about having a God box. Like, you write down a problem and you put it in the box and you put it on your shelf, and then you go back to it, you know, a few months later, and And again, my experience has been that I've written down a problem and I didn't know what to do about it. I didn't know how to resolve it. And I go back and I open up the box and the problem has been resolved without me doing anything. And it's not resolved in the way that I thought it should have been resolved or could have been resolved. It's often resolved in a way that I never thought of. I never saw it coming. And that's kind of the, I guess, yeah, the universe or the higher power or whatever. I don't have to know what it is. And yeah, I get it that, yeah, if you can get past the whole the God thing, it's just there's so much gold to be had in the program.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not, yeah, as I said, it's a God of your own understanding. Mm-hmm. It's not a Christian or religious. It's not a religious God.
Mm-hmm. And it really is. It's about getting the idea that the power outside of you is much bigger than you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everything is, well, yeah.
Yeah. And you couldn't possibly have all the answers. I love it when it gets resolved in a way that I didn't anticipate because it gives me permission, gives me a license not to bother trying to work it out next time.
Yeah, because that's the other thing. It's like a thing that comes naturally to me is how I have this thought of how can you stand by and let this happen?
Yep.
And it's like I've got to get involved. I've got to tell that person that they're heading for, you know, a terrible outcome. I've got to get involved and say, if you do this, this is going to happen and it's going to be bad. And, yeah, most of the time, well, and, yeah, what I keep finding is if I shut my mouth and just let things unfold, they it works itself out.
Mm-hmm. And they've got a brain as well. They can figure it out.
They just do, And who wants to be told what to do anyway?
No, it's not
I
good.
Don't. No. So I don't know why I keep thinking.
Yeah.
It's 'cause, that I'm cleverer than everyone else. Yeah,
that's right. And in Al-Anon too, they say, you know, when you're dealing with a live situation, and we've been quite lighthearted here, but often a person living with an alcoholic's dealing with life and death problems, and it might be their child, so it's pretty heavy stuff. But there's that idea that you don't cause a crisis to try and fix it, and you don't prevent a crisis if that's what's coming.
Yeah.
Because it's that very crisis that might get them to change for themselves or whatever. Or even beyond that, it's not up to you to be fixing crises. And
no, and I find, again, the alcoholic loved ones in my life go from crisis to crisis to crisis to crisis, and they're used to living that way. And they always seem to know, they always work it out in their own way.
In their own way.
And I have never seen them not work it, or it just kind of things reset. But, there's always a crisis to pick up.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, and you're right, like it's hard with, my children are teenagers, they're not adults, but I think having a child who is an alcoholic would be really, really hard. But again, from what I can tell, it's like the principles are the same. It's mm-hmm. that it's, I can't change this for you. It has to come from you or it won't come at all.
Mm-hmm. But if you can put your own oxygen mask on, then you're a stable person for that child to come back to if they needed to.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah. It's funny. I know of someone who went to Alateen as a teenager, became an alcoholic themselves, and when they went to their first AA meeting, they said they just felt at home. They didn't question it. They didn't have to think about it. They didn't question going back. They just went, back home. I can. This is the problem. Fixable now. So, what am I saying there?
So if someone's drinking has affected you, just go to a meeting. Go to a meeting and just try it.
Yeah, yeah.
And see and listen for the similarities, not the differences, because there seems to be.
Yeah.
You'll often find them.
You'll be amazed at the similarities.
Yeah.
And I think, and also it's worth pointing out, you can go, there's meetings just for parents of alcoholics.
Mm-hmm.
And there's meetings for queer people. Mm-hmm. There's all sorts of meetings. So you can find them online.
Yes.
And you can get on them all over the world on Zoom.
Yep.
There's just meetings all the time, and women only, men only.
Yeah, I actually, I go to one in Brooklyn on a Sunday morning.
New York?
Brooklyn, New York, women's only meeting.
Uh-huh.
And it's great.
Uh-huh.
And then I go to my in-person meeting.
Yeah, yeah.
But I love going to Brooklyn every Sunday.
Well,
but you can definitely, I will just use this time to point out that, the website is alanon.org.au, and on the website there is a phone number, there's a helpline, it is 24 hours. It is run by volunteers, and you can have a chat to a member if you want to, but also on the website is the updated meeting list of all the meetings around Melbourne and the suburbs. So,
Okay, I go to a meeting. You can go to a meeting in Manhattan.
I do.
Every morning at 7:30. Start your day, right? Yeah, great meeting. Anyway, Balanwa's coming on. So here we are at the end of the show. So thank you so much for coming on, Sienna.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
If you are worried about drinking and someone else, you can call 1-300-252-666 or go to alanon.org.au. If you're concerned about your own drinking, you can call AA on 1-300-222-222 or go online at aa.org.au. Coming up next, they're standing at the door. We should have been able to hear it. We have Balanwa, hosted by Uncle Taljum. Join Uncle Taljum on a journey of belonging and movement through sing-alongs and yarns. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and stay tuned now to 3CR for more radical radio. Bye for now.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.